They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome back to issue 43 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that has 52 variant podcasts out this week. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, Dave McVeigh. Now!
David, I don't know how we're going to manage to record another 51 of these this week, but it's what we're planning to do.
That's what we are planning to. We're relaunching every day this month. Welcome back, everybody. It's been a long month and I've been so wanting to talk. So
yeah, I've got nothing.
Richard, how's your month been?
My month has been interesting, but it's comics-wise, it's pretty much been taken up rereading this Why the Last Man that we're doing this week. I've been catching up on The Walking Dead. We'll talk about this more. You've read way more than I have this month.
I have been mildly obsessed in Marvel now.
Look, I've read a few of them, and you're going to talk about this in length in a minute, but honestly, yeah, no, I agree with you. So the stuff I've read so far, it is one of the better relaunches, because it's how you do it. It's how you relaunch a series with by not actually rebooting anything.
Marvel just took DC to school. Let's be honest, okay?
Look, we were teasing the Marvel Now concept back when when it first came out, saying it's like, they're just copying what DC's doing. No, they've got it right. DC.
And we'll talk about it more in what we've been watching as to what exactly they have done. But it's been a very long month. Before we get started on this show, we should say that this is the last of the monthly shows.
Yes.
So next month, next episode will actually be in 2 weeks, and it'll be our Christmas show.
Which has been about a year since we did the last Christmas
show. About a year, that's right. Yeah. We are kind of teasing, though, because it's going to be, I think it's going to be 2 weeks, we do a Christmas show, and then I don't think we come back for 3 weeks because there's Christmas in the middle.
Yeah, you can't begrudge us a little eggnog.
No, exactly. You know. So it's going to be, it's kind of awkward, but yeah, we will be fortnightly. Except for the first one, because of Christmas. But we will be back shortly in the very beginning of
January.
What is it? January.
January.
That's right.
Yeah, that's where the year tradition
starts. I've started the eggnog early.
Well, before you worry about 2013, in this issue, we talk about Marvel Now, of course.
Of course.
It started. And the latest superhero TV, because it's still going. Then DC takes a digital stand and goes overboard with the variant covers. Meanwhile, help reveal the Man of Steel as what? I don't know. And Marvel takes another crack at that Phase 1 box set, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Why the Last Man, the entire thing.
What a read.
But before we get on to that, because before we talk about the Last Man, it's time to fight for our women's rights in the vintage clip of the week, and I might have a bonus for us this week.
Cool.
But let's try this one on for size.
It's raining cats and dogs. Steve's plane must be grounded.
Mother, mother, I won't be having any dinner tonight.
No dinner?
No.
Oh, don't be silly.
Where do you think all that strength comes from?
Those gods?
No, from my cooking.
I have to help Steve. He's waiting at the airport and there are no planes.
Look, you're not so smart that you can't take a mother's advice. Now, this is no kind of a night for you to be flying around in that outfit of
Mother,
yours. This is the kind of a night for you to watch TV or read the newspaper, eat your roughage.
But the fate of the free world depends on me.
All right. Eat first. Save the free world later. You can't be a decent martyr on an empty stomach.
This can't wait.
The nation needs Wonder Woman. And what about Wonder Woman? Does the nation care what she needs? Like a fellow, for example, huh?
Please, Ma, not now.
No, sure, not now. Never. How do you expect to get a husband flying around all the time? Isn't it about time that you decide to stay in one spot for a change? You don't know how it feels to be the mother of an unmarried daughter your age. Why, the whole neighborhood's talking. Look at Lucille Maxwell. Why, she's 24 years old, got 3 kids already.
But, Mom, she's not married.
Details. Always details. Will you stop eating when I'm talking to you?
Mom, I've got in a rush.
Stop! I get you dates with the finest and the most eligible MDs, CPAs, PhDs, and what happens? Nothing. What do you want, anyway?
An M.A.N.
I'm sorry. I think there's something we can take out of that. It's hard being a martyr on an empty stomach. Okay.
That, my friend, is from a very rare 1967 unaired pilot called Who's Afraid of Diana Prince?
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding at all. This is, it was originally going to be the Wonder Woman series. And I have to quickly look this up. It had, it was going to have, that wasn't the voice of Linda Hamilton, but it was going to have Linda Hamilton as Wonder Woman.
Linda Hamilton?
Yeah, shortly before she was in Planet of the Apes.
Right.
But that was an unearned pilot, and I've forgotten the name of the person whose voice you just heard. Whoops, I've accidentally looked up Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
That's an easy mistake to make.
But
they're both feminist masterpieces, of course.
Absolutely. As you can, the reason I pulled that one out this week was because, of course, we're doing Why the Last Man, so I tried to find something a little bit feminist.
Of course.
And because I'd already done the episode where women took over society in Batman, I decided to look for something from Wonder Woman, but I didn't want to go the obvious 1970s Wonder Woman route. So Who's Afraid of Diana Prince was the name of the series. It never aired. There's about 5 minutes of it that exists on YouTube, and I think that's all that shot for it. The voices that you heard there were Ellie Wood-Walker, played Diana Prince. She was the wife of Robert Walker Jr., Linda Harrison, not Linda Hamilton. I don't know why Linda Hamilton.
I was going to say, sorry. Linda Hamilton, shortly before she was born and then went on to be the Terminator. Yeah. Being the Terminator.
Linda Harrison.
Right, there we go.
the other Linda Hamilton. Linda Harrison was going to be...
The Linda Hamilton of the 1960s.
Yeah, that's right. She was actually playing Wonder Woman, and Morty Prickett was the other voice you heard in there, which was Diana's mother.
Right.
According to Wikipedia, the pilot episode was never broadcast and the project was taken no further. The pilot's been circulated on the internet and is of interest to Planet of the Apes fans for the early appearance of Linda Harrison,
right?
Who would later go on to play Nova in the first two films of that series.
That's what you put the helmet on and flew in space.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Not that Nova, David.
Oh, okay. I've read way too much Guardians.
And of course, 7 years later, we actually had the Wonder Woman TV series on.
And what is interesting is the other night, I've managed to procure a copy of it, which I won't say from where, but we were watching, my family and I, the 1974 pilot for a Wonder Woman series that never took off either, starring Kathy Lee Crosby as Wonder Woman.
Wow.
And it's like, it is awful. Yeah. It is really. And you think, I'm not surprised this wasn't picked up for series.
But David, this week, I thought it was a bit special because we're doing a little bit of a feminist episode this week, mm-hmm. because it's a very female-heavy cast in Why the Last Man. I've got a bonus vintage clip for us.
Oh, please.
From 1974, and let's prepare to fight for women's rights on this one.
High noon in Gotham City. A deserted warehouse on the outskirts of town. And a ticking bomb spells trouble for Batman and Robin.
Holy, breaking and entering. It's Batgirl.
Quick, Batgirl. Untie us before it's too late.
It's already too late. I've worked for you a long time, and I'm paid less than Robin.
Holy discontent.
Same job, same employer means equal pay for men and women.
No time for jokes, Batgirl.
It's no joke. It's the federal equal pay law.
Holy act of Congress.
Can we talk about this later?
Will Batgirl save the dynamic duo? Will she get equal pay? Tune in tomorrow or contact the Wage and Hour Division listed in your phone book under the U.S. Department of Labor.
Oh, my God.
Holy act of Congress, David. That was actually a 1974 public service announcement on equal pay. It was Batgirl for equal pay, right?
It's something we don't see nowadays, is
no.
it? We don't see our cast of characters from our popular television shows doing PSAs on television.
Yeah. No,
I think we should bring this back.
Yeah, that was actually the first clip I found, and it was only later that I found the Diana Prince thing. It was too late to both of them were too good to pass up that opportunity.
Oh, they're fantastic.
To play them both. But that was there used to be a lot of PSAs, as you say,
yeah.
with various superheroes in it. I mean, there was the I don't have the clip here, but it's like "So long, Nikatin" with very Russian.
Oh
sounding
yes,
Superman.
The Russian Superman.
I don't think he was meant to. I think he was meant to sound very manly. but yeah, no,
I think
you're
we
right.
should have the CW's Arrow.
Yeah,
out there talking about like
shaft, you know, maintenance.
Shaft.
9 out of 10 men.
Or little blue pills. Oh dear. Okay. On that note,
Walking Dead on the perils of
decapitation.
Decapitation on necromancy or something. I don't know. about being the passive person in a necrophiliac relationship.
Wouldn't that mean you're dead?
Hence the more submissive partner.
There's the more submissive partner. Absolutely. All right.
But there you go. There's a bit of fun for the week. Vintage, before we get on to what we've been reading and what we've been watching, I got a little bit of feedback from the last episode. That's issue 42, for those of you looking it up on the interwebs. Last month, we kind of introduced a little bit more of what we've been watching with what I've been reading. What we've been reading as well. God, I can't speak today, David.
It has been a month. We're out of
practice.
It's
been a month. I've forgotten how to speak. I've just been sitting alone in a cone of silence for the last 4 weeks. No, but last week we introduced the sort of a regular what we've been watching, because at the moment we've got two really good comic book series running on television. Hopefully, and next year we'll have a third one to add to that as well with S.H.I.E.L.D.
And possibly a fourth if Guillermo del Toro could actually produce something.
I've seen him sign up for another three projects since then, so I'm not entirely convinced. But Justin Pearson Smith wrote into us via Facebook, who's one of our regular listeners and one of our regular faithful listeners there. So I was a bit disappointed to hear that we'd spoiled the show for him, which was The Walking Dead Season 2. But he says that, would it be too much to ask for a bit more notice before you reveal character deaths on TV shows? I'm not up to date on The Walking Dead and you just spoiled it. I'm going through season 2 now. It's not particularly easy to pause a podcast whilst driving. Fair enough.
I understand.
And I had about 5 seconds notice. I'm not saying don't discuss it. Just give people who aren't up to date a little bit more warning before blurting out spoilers. Now, fair enough, Justin. Although I did listen back to that episode, and I think that we actually gave plenty of warning. We have said that season 3 we're not going to spoil because it's ongoing. As of this recording, I think we're about 7 episodes in.
Something like that.
By the time this episode probably goes out, we will have had 8 episodes.
And I know how he feels. I'm 2 episodes behind on Walking Dead at the moment, and I wouldn't want anyone to spoil what was coming up.
Oh, so I won't tell you who's done. No, but I mean, that's fair enough. But I mean, we did say at the start of that segment that season 1 and 2 were fair game. And I think we gave ample notice, but sorry for spoiling that for you, Justin.
Absolutely.
We always hate to spoil things.
I mean, if we were on the film actually show, you would have heard something along the lines of, "Oh, what is it? We used to do."
We had a little spoiler.
Yeah,
warning,
we did something like this. Yeah, so you know, we used to do something like that, and we don't do that here because we actually make a disclaimer right at the beginning. It's spoilers on all on this show, because we're mostly spoiling comic books, and that's fine.
Yeah, nobody reads them.
Nobody reads comic books. No, I mean, this is a comic discussion show, and if you can't discuss the things that happen in comics, then it makes it very hard to discuss. But in introducing more on film and television, yes, we will always try and give some sort of pre-warning on spoilers, and we actually did in that instance. It just obviously wasn't quite enough. Maybe we need to have something like a spoiler zone chime off or something like that for future. I don't think we're spoiling any television today.
We'll talk a little bit about where Arrow and Walking Dead are up to. Yep. As we're recording this, though, it's Thanksgiving in the States. What has been a mid-season break, and it's been there was no new Arrow episode this week. As a result of that, we did have a new Walking Dead, but it's about to go off for a mid-season break.
Yep.
Unfortunately, because it's gotten really, really, really good.
Well, give me a chance to catch up on the 2 episodes.
I would say, look, you having read more of the comic than I have, it's getting pretty faithful to that period.
Yes and no. We can discuss that.
There are some discrepancies, though, although they're starting to pull all the threads together. It's faithful to the spirit of it in the fact that it's getting very, very dark at the moment. Character departures and arrivals do differ. And I won't talk about a couple of the major departures in the last few episodes, because that would be some major spoilage.
That would be some major spoilage. I will say that from what I've seen so far, they have, although changed the character, because in the comic books, if anybody's read the comic books, if anybody's ever read the Walking Dead comic books, the governor is actually portrayed as kind of almost Hispanic in nature, and he's kind of weedy, and he's got long stringy hair, and he's kind of just a horrible looking person. So they haven't made a major departure from that characterization, but I will say that the governor of the TV series is really good.
Oh, look, David Morrissey is the governor.
He's doing a great job.
Apparently what he's done, because there was a standalone novel written about the governor that went back.
Where was this? I didn't even see
this. It's written by Kirkman, I believe, and it's not actually a comic book. It's actually a novel that's just been written. It's a bit of backstory for the governor. Just to talk about what sort of man he was before the apocalypse.
Right, right.
Before the zombie apocalypse. And he actually said he went back and read that to get an idea of what this man's like. So you can see that in his performance, that he's got a very clear idea of who his character is.
Yeah, yeah.
As he's bringing him to life. Very different to what's on page. Mm. And I dare say, though, I think we're going to get a far more complex governor as a result of this, because it is going to some of those same dark places, but not as quickly.
Right, right.
So
fair enough.
And I think we're going to get, he's kind of, for people who haven't read the comics, he has got the characters that are around him who believe in him. You start to think, yeah, this guy's all right. Mm-hmm. I kind of like it. So I really like the way they go. And who knows, they might surprise us.
That's true.
It wouldn't be the first time, but really, really, really liking where this is going. My only problem at the moment is, for the first time, I'm actually watching this week by week and just craving the next episode, because I've been watching them in season lots up until
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly. And so, it makes it very hard. And one of the reasons why I am two episodes behind is I wanted to have a run-up.
Yeah.
So now is my chance to have a bit of a run-up on it. I've enjoyed that. I take it we're in the what you've been watching segment at this point.
Yeah, now look, we've moved in. We don't have a jingle for
no,
it.
No, so we might as well just move straight into it. And we'll say we will try and watch out for spoilers for future. So while we're on television, let's continue on with that and say Arrow.
Look, you know, I'm still loving this. If anything, it's gotten better. Again, as I said when we first started talking about this, I'm an easy sell because I'm a huge Arrow fan, but I'm also going to be the harshest critic on this as well, but really given me no reason to be harsh. I really like where they're taking it. Like we said last time,
he's
slowly building his little team together. They're introducing more and more characters from the DCU, so we're actually getting a whole universe being pulled together.
Well, I thought the introduction of Deathstroke was fascinating.
Deathstroke, and we had...
Deadshot.
We had the Royal Flush Gang in the most recently aired episode. Of course, you've already got people in place like, Dinah Lance and so forth.
What I actually really like, I'll bring this up very quickly, is I really like the fact that they're taking these other characters from the DCU, a great example of this would be the Royal Flush Gang, and making them realistic.
Yes.
So instead of being these outlandish supervillains, they made them just a gang of bank robbers, basically, who are wearing the cards on their masks.
Basically hockey masks.
Basically
cards
hockey masks,
on them,
and you sit there and go, it's a really nice way of kind of grounding the DC universe. And I've been really enjoying this.
And probably
aspect.
Deathstroke's the only one where it's kind of like, why are you wearing that?
Yeah, and but at the same time, you kind of go, okay, so he's some sort of huge silent killer in this particular case. And you sit there and go, okay, I can buy the fact that it's an intimidation thing.
Yeah,
it's almost like a wrestler.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like thing. And look, everything they've done about this series is like, a lot of people complained when the series first started about him just spray painting his eyes rather than wearing a proper mask. Well, maybe they'll build up to the mask. Maybe he'll realize at some stage he needs it. But I quite like it because it's kind of what you wouldn't...
Well, it's tribal.
It's tribal. And it's not like, it's not the first thing on his mind is wearing a mask and doing all this sort of thing. He's got his basic costume. It's functional more than anything. And he's off, stalking the night with bows and arrows. I really, really like the way this is going. I'm really looking forward to the next episode, which is actually screening late November. So it will have screened by the time this podcast goes out. It's called Muses of Fire. It's going to be the introduction of the Huntress to the series. Now
that's been highly
publicized. It's also being co-written by Jeff Johns.
Oh,
so I'm really, really, really looking forward to that episode.
That's going to be interesting. I'm very curious to see the Huntress come into this. So I
like that he's introducing her to the series.
Look, I'm keen on this series. This series can only go up at the moment. I think. I do like the fact that Diggle is starting to ground Arrow.
Yeah.
So you've basically got Oliver Queen on this personal mission. You've got Diggle basically saying, you know what? There are smaller things that need to be taken care of as well.
Which is why they had the Royal Flush Gang.
That's right. And I love the fact he says, what kind of hero are you? He goes, I'm not a hero.
Yeah.
But he's becoming a hero.
Because one of my biggest objections to the series when it started was like, really? Green Arrow going around killing people? Is this the sort of Green Arrow series I want?
He was just a vigilante.
And he was. And six episodes in, they're starting to bring in the idea that, no, he's going to be something more. He is effectively going to be the Batman of Starling City, as they've called it. So I think it can only go up from here. We're only six episodes in. We've got 22 in this first season. So even if they can it after this first season, I think we're going to have a pretty decent run.
And they're introducing some very interesting mystery elements.
Yes.
With the husband discovers... Spoilers, people. Sorry. Spoilers.
The husband... Hang on. If you're driving...
Pause now. Pause now. We'll give you a second. Okay, time's up. This is nobody dies in this spoiler. It's okay. It's actually happened a few episodes ago. But the fact that the husband discovered the boat.
Yes.
You know? And stuff like that. Introducing these mystery elements
actually,
to it.
To be fair, there's a lot of viewers who probably wouldn't have seen this, certainly in Australia yet.
That's true.
I saw an ad for it on Channel 9 the other day. Brand new series coming in 2013.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we would be, what, 12 episodes in right now.
Whatever happened to direct from the United States?
You know? It's like fast-tracked.
Fast-tracked.
6 months. what do they put it on a robot?
It vaguely reminds me of a scene from Arthur Christmas last night where he's going, it's 3,000 miles. We can make it. He's running in the boat.
Which is exactly how I imagine some films and TV shows get to Australia these days.
Absolutely.
I'm a bit disappointed with that, but
the good news is that it is going to come out here, and it is going to get 22 episodes, which means
it'll be on Channel 9, which unfortunately in Australia means it'll get played at 11. It'll play once at prime time, get shafted to 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the morning. And then,
you're talking about the Star Trek and Buffy syndrome.
Yeah, well, every genre bit of television Channel 9's ever gotten hold of, they've shafted to the wee hours of the morning, so I'm not optimistic.
Because it's much more important to show reruns of X Factor and stuff like that.
Yeah, so. You got to go with the people go. Yeah.
Although I think X Factor's Channel 10, but that's beside the point. Yeah. Don't write to me, people.
They've all got one.
I don't watch network television. Don't write to me.
But stay tuned for our new podcast.
Network television. New podcast. I don't watch network television. Hey, there you go.
David, you've been reading stuff as well. I'm going to just neatly segue off this bashing of network television. All hail our network television masters.
No. But anyway, I've been reading a lot, actually, yes. Look, it's no big surprise.
What have you been reading now?
Now. It's no big secret. We've actually been talking about it for months now, which is Marvel Now. And one of the big speculations, of course, was, what is Marvel Now? Is it a reboot? Is it
well,
a this?
Well, I'm glad you asked, David.
Hey, there you go. As it turns out, it's just Marvel Now.
It's kind of like, you know, we've run out of numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're going back to the beginning. They went with film,
Invincible
actually.
Iron Man 527. That number is far too big. Let's backtrack it, you know? Mm. No, basically what it is they reshuffled all of their creative teams and basically said everything is a little bit stale, a little bit stagnant. What if we re-energized everything?
What I like what they've done here, before you get into specifics, I really like the fact that they've gone and got really good creative teams together and match them with series that would fit.
Yes.
And that was their starting point, rather than saying, let's just start the whole universe from the beginning, say with 52 new titles.
What a concept that would have been. Now, this really is Marvel schooling DC. And now, we talked a lot about the new 52.
It's taking them out and paddling them over a barrel.
Because I'm very happy to announce, after being very, very concerned about this entire thing, that Marvel Now works. They didn't shred their continuity. They didn't say it's all over, we're starting all over again. Yes, they're all number ones, or actually, in fact, I'm going to change that, because a couple of them aren't even number ones. Most of them are number ones, but they've basically just gone, this is all new story arcs from this moment. And so basically everybody has a jumping on point at this point. There is new things to read, new adventures to have. Let's start with a couple of the probably lesser titles, because everybody talks about Spider-Man or the Avengers or what have you. The Hulk is a really interesting one, because Indestructible Hulk number one is brilliant, because it starts with Bruce Banner basically pulling Maria Hill aside, meeting her at a diner and saying, I hear you've been looking for me. You know? And he goes, and I've just come up with, I've been thinking a lot. She goes, you've been off the radar for a long time, Banner. Where have you been? And he says, I've been thinking a lot. And it just occurred to me that I've been spending all of my time trying to find a cure. And it has just occurred to me that I'm incurable. So instead of trying to find a cure, he goes, all these other brains out there, Reed Richards and Tony Stark, are getting accolades for their brains and for everything. And all I'm going to be remembered for is Smash. And he goes, it's not fair. And so basically what he wants to do is focus his time when he's not the Hulk on being a genius again and actually being smart and trying to do stuff. And basically gives her an invention and says, here you go, here's clean energy. I thought of that this morning, right? You know, it's like, and he goes, every day I could be giving another new thing. And then what we need to do with the Hulk is, rather than, you know, him causing wanton destruction, think of him as a tank. point him in the right direction and let him do your bidding. So now he's basically started to work for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Nice.
And he, in the first issue, is an audition where she says, okay, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, this is going to happen in this room next door. I've done all the research, blah, blah. This is what's going to happen. She goes, okay. And she points him in that direction, basically says, go for it. And Hulk smash, big time. Mm. And then, of course, he's back to being Banner. And she goes, you're hired. You know? So it's this very different direction now because Banner is no longer looking for a cure. He's realized he's incurable.
Mm.
So now it's a matter of trying to find out what he can do.
I really like that. And it's Mark Waid's writing that one.
He is. So he's come on board. Really, and it's a big debut. It's a really fantastic issue. So that, to give you an idea of Marvel now, that is kind of what is going across the board. The idea of just facing, taking all these characters we know and love, their histories are intact, and they're saying, where can we go with them now? What can we do with them? So I think the biggest, well, of course, we've also got some new stuff happening as well. But I think some of the bigger ones are things like Red She-Hulk.
Mm.
Now, not a character I've ever read. I've never really been bothered. In fact, the first time I ever really experienced Red She-Hulk at all was Invincible Hulk comic book at one point. I do know that it's Betty Ross, and she's been turned into this Hulk. But she has a whole agenda, and she's been having a whole book to herself.
Mm.
They haven't even bothered to renumber her book. Mm. So her Marvel now starts at issue 58 and 59, and she's now into that universe as well. And she's awesome. She is a vigilante Red She-Hulk, super powerful, who has basically decided that all those other superpower beings out there are responsible for the way she is, and so she wants to stop them all. Hmm. And so she's basically a bad guy, and she's brilliant, and she's really good. Deadpool, not a character that I've ever really read.
Did read this one, yeah.
Now, Deadpool is a character who I think is really funny, and when I do see him in comics, I like him. But I've never really gone out of my way to read his books.
No.
Deadpool 1 and 2 of the Marvel Now are hysterically funny.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
And it's all about the fact that this strange wizard has basically given rise to all of the old ex-presidents of America, basically trying to clean up the country, but has now found out that what they all really want to do is, their answer to cleaning up the country is destroy America.
Mm.
And so S.H.I.E.L.D. is trying to stop all these specters running around of the ex-presidents, and they're a splash page on the front page of the newspaper is Captain America beheading one of them. And they basically said, we can't have the Avengers beheading and killing presidents of the United States. It's not good PR. So they need somebody who can work covertly. Enter Deadpool. And Deadpool basically is like, yeah, sure, give me $1 million and I'll stop all these people for you. And he's being followed around by the ghost of Benjamin Franklin, who isn't one of those specters, but he's just roaming around, who's helping him, giving him advice. This is a funny book.
Yeah.
No, it's just insane. And well worth having a look at. Avengers Assemble, not a comic book I've loved. And we've talked about this before. Yeah. Not a comic book I've loved. I always felt like it was the poor man's Avengers book. Knocked it out of the park this month. Issue 9 is Marvel Now. And basically they've started a new story arc. And we now have Banner and Tony Stark basically having a discussion about who is smarter. And they're basically saying Tony Stark was all razzle-dazzle. And and so they make a wager to find out where this missing scientist has gone, and who can do it first wins the prize of being the best Avenger, basically. And so they go on this race, and while they're on the race, Hulk and Spider-Woman and Iron Man and Thor, the rest of the Avengers are eating popcorn out of the microwave watching the events unfold on monitors. It is very funny stuff.
It's like The Amazing Race, but with Avengers.
It is, except with Avengers. It's very clever stuff. Now, that out of all the new books, the concept that I think we discussed about 2 months ago, where we said that Bendis was joining X-Men, Brian Michael Bendis, for those who don't know what I'm talking about, and basically the idea was with the all new X-Men was to bring the old X-Men from the 60s into the now.
That's right.
For this new book called The All New X-Men. We thought, well, this has got disaster written all over it. Surprise, surprise, best book of the month. Bendis is writing, he wrote it, he knocked it out of the park. Absolutely knocked it out of the park. Here is a concept that is so stupid at its core, and yet he makes it work. When Beast turns up in the past and basically says, you need to come back with me and talk to Scott, you buy it.
Yeah.
You're not even questioning the fact that Beast has traveled through time. You're not even questioning the fact, how did he get there? It's just, he did it. And, you know, he's a genius and he did it. And it is well written. It is, it has humor. It has pathos. Now, the only complaint I would have with that book, if anything, would be, A, I'm looking forward to the next issue desperately. But B, you kind of need Avengers versus X-Men Consequences for it to make sense. Avengers versus X-Men Consequences, which finished this month, basically has Scott breaking out of prison and now going recruiting X-Men. Or going recruiting mutants all around the planet and being basically a vigilante. And everybody's saying he has to be stopped, which is what the impetus for Beast to go back in time. Because Bobby actually makes a comment, Iceman makes a comment where he says, if old Scott could see Scott now, he would be ashamed of himself. And Beast takes that to heart.
Yeah.
And so that's the whole concept of it is to bring Scott to the modern
day. I like that thing because I found it really hard. One of my biggest leaps with... Avengers versus X-Men was the fact that Scott went rogue. I mean, he's the ultimate Boy Scout. So I found that leap a little difficult to make a lot of the time. Well,
this is kind of making it make sense.
Yeah, so I like that they've done that.
That's I like the fact good. That Scott Summers is referring to his little group, which is Emma, Magneto, and himself rounding up these, and Magic, rounding up the other mutants, and he's calling himself the X-Men, and they're all wearing X-Men uniforms, and he's basically saying, come and be in it. So it's like he's just gone off completely rogue off the camp, you know, and he doesn't think he's doing anything wrong, and that kind of fits into the Boy Scout mentality. He thinks he is being righteous. So, even though it's hurting everybody else around him. Overall, this has been an amazing relaunch of Marvel.
And it doesn't stop until February, I think. No.
Well, we've still got Guardians and Nova and a whole bunch of stuff
coming
out.
Almost every week, there's at least one or two new.
Another one I just want to bring up very quickly, which was actually two I'll bring up very, very quickly. One is Fantastic Four, which is one that I don't read very often. And Fantastic Four number one actually got me really intrigued because the idea behind Fantastic Four now is that Richards has discovered that the cosmic energy that basically made them the Fantastic Four might be wearing off and they might be starting to break apart. And so he decides that to research this, he needs to be out in space and the cosmic energies. But so his excuse to this is he says that he hasn't been a very good father and for the family. So they retrofit an alien ship that they have. And basically he says to his wife, Invisible Girl, he says, let's go out into space for a year with the kids and take an adventure.
Yeah.
You know, have an adventure in space. And the kicker to this whole thing is that it's a time machine. So he said at the end of the year, we'll just come back to 4 minutes after we left. 4 minutes. I'm not sure why the 4 minutes, but anyway, 4 minutes after we left, and like we would never have been gone, and so that's how the kickoff for Fantastic Four begins. And you go, all right, I'm really intrigued by this because they can basically do anything they want.
Yeah, I think a lot of this stuff seems to be going to be tying to the cosmic.
Yeah,
from what I understand, the cosmic's going to form a big part of 2013 in the comics, and then a big part of 2014 in their movies. Yes. So. I'm excited.
I'm very, very excited. I thought I'd bring up DC. I'm being very unfair to DC. I just very quickly mentioned DC. Death of the Family has started. The only two I want to mention are part of that. I mean, there's been other titles as well, but the only two I'll mention are those. Batman number 14, Batgirl number 14, both amazing issues, both dealing directly with the Joker. And out of those two in particular, Batman number 14 is must-read stuff. So definitely have a look at this. This is Joker as you've probably never seen him before. He is just outright maniacal. But it's also Batgirl like you've never seen in Batgirl because Joker reenacts the Killing Joke. He sends three goons to her door, blah, 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 and she kicks the snot out of them. Because she said, her thought bubbles are, he thought this would scare me. He thought this would incapacitate me with fear, and it just makes me angry. It's great. Yeah. So it's going to be very interesting to see where the death of the family goes. And Joker has now made his plan open in Batman 14, which basically is he plans on killing them all.
Well, you know, he can try.
The bigger thrust to his plan, though, is he plans on killing them all, and his answer is, he says, and Batman, you will do it.
Yeah.
So it's going to be very interesting to see where this goes to. So
I think it's that title's been doing no wrong.
Snyder is brilliant.
Yeah,
he is brilliant.
I really look forward to seeing what he does with Superman next year as well.
I'm very interested to see his Superman because Superman at the moment is flailing.
Superman has always been flailing for me. Just off topic completely. Well, not really. We're talking about comics.
It's not really off topic.
Superman has always been flailing for me because it's a book that unless it's done very, very, very well, I have no interest in the character whatsoever. Mm. And I've mentioned this before on the show. I find him a really tough character to like because he's effectively a god. It's kind of like, well. Yeah, okay, that's kind of impressive, but I knew you could fly and throw buildings around and stuff. Oh, look, Lois is in trouble again.
What's interesting, though, is I actually find at the moment in the New 52, 14 issues in, I find Supergirl a much more compelling character than Superman. I think she's really interesting because she's trying to find her path.
And she's flawed and she's got an arc.
And she can't even speak English.
Superman's always like kind of at the top of his game.
Yeah.
And unfortunately with Morrison's Action Comics run, which was like Superman starting out, there just wasn't that connection, and he got to him being Superman
way too fast. Yeah. He should still be discovering. 14 issues in, we should be nowhere near the Superman of Superman.
No.
Otherwise, what's the point in having two
now
books?
Effectively we've got two or three Superman books once you put Justice League and all that sort of
stuff. Agreed. So. Yeah, no, I think Superman needs a giant injection of something new, and
I think
Snyder's the one to do that.
Snyder's going to do that for Superman, and I think somebody else is taking over. I've forgotten who's taking over from Grant Morrison. I think it's Diggle. I think it might be Andy Diggle. Oh,
that would be good.
I think it was someone like
that. Look, I think Grant Morrison, aside from his book Happy, which is two issues in and just brilliant, I think Morrison's run on superheroes, I'm bored now.
Yeah, no,
I think
I
his take on superheroes, I'm bored.
Yeah, no.
I'm bored of Batman Incorporated as well. He doesn't do anything for me at the moment.
I'm surprised that I have tired of Batman Inc. so quickly, given that it had such a promising first two or three issues.
Batcow.
And Batcow's come back a couple of times, but he's not a fully fledged member of the team yet. So I think the last we saw him, he was being fed in the Batcave by Alfred. So there's that as well. Should we move on with some movie news?
We should.
Not even movie news. Comics news.
Do you have a soundboard ready? Because I know.
Oh, yeah, probably somewhere. Hang on. So you want a little bit of this?
What a scoop!
That's the stuff.
You're listening to Behind the Panels, the most professional podcast on the web. Look, there's a bit of news. You actually reminded me when you were talking about people taking over and stuff. Green Arrow. This is one that I completely forgot about. The news came out about two or three days after we recorded the last episode.
Right.
Jeff Lemire is taking over Green Arrow.
Well, it can only be a good thing.
Well,
at this point,
he's basically saying he's taking over from issue 17. He's saying, I'm not rebooting, but think of it as issue one. So I really like it. It's also Andrea Sorrentino, who's done iVampire, beautiful artwork on iVampire, even though I'm not really into the book.
The artwork's beautiful.
So that team should make it a very handsome read as well. I mean, Lemire's been doing some great stuff with Animal Man, even though that arc has kind of started to peter out a little bit, but... I'm looking forward to this, and he's really going back into the mythology. He's going to look at, apparently, get into some more of the year one stuff. I can see them tying it in more with what's happening in the TV series.
So he's got
the same similar sort of vibe. You said he's looking at stuff like Mike Grell's run, which was very gritty urban hunter stuff. So I'm really looking forward to his take on it. I just wanted to mention that quickly.
As I say, it can only be a good thing because if there was ever a comic book out there which I went, piqued my interest and then lost me completely, is Arrow.
He says, I intend to hurt Oliver Queen, strip him down to the bone, and force him to rise up and become the hero he was destined to be. I hope you come along for the ride.
Oh, I'll be there.
Yep. Now, still on DC, we've got, they've issued a statement on digital distribution timing. Now, apparently what they've actually done is they're bringing it in line, and I could be... remembering this wrong, but what they've actually done is they've brought the timing of their digital releases in line with what's happening with the Kindle, Nook, and similar updates. So it actually comes out a little bit earlier than it normally would. So you actually get them a few hours earlier on those things. The interesting thing is the reaction of this to retailers. The retailers have had, because it actually means rather than the digital comics being day and date, they're a good 5, 6, sometimes 10 hours earlier than the West Coast.
Interesting.
That's had a which is contrary to what DC said they wouldn't do.
Right.
For those retailers. Now, if DC are going to stick to this, I think it's an example to me of the digital driving the market, or the technology driving the supply. In this particular case, in that you've got the established update pattern of the digital actually dictating when the comics get released onto the market. There are some distributors in the retailers in the States that get their comics on Tuesday but don't put them out on the shelves until Wednesdays. It could be the case that they start to release them on the the Tuesday night.
Well, time differences do make a trick. I mean, it is a hard thing to deal with.
And America's a big country.
Yeah, and it crosses four time zones. So there are going to be issues with. I mean, I think it is impossible to release something at exactly the same time.
I mean, for us, it's great because we don't get our comics till Thursday, effectively.
Yeah.
It might mean that we get our comics a little bit earlier as a result of it, if we're reading them principally digitally now, which we certainly are. Mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting shift, and to me, it sort of marks maybe the point where digital comics are starting to become the norm.
Yep.
And I think that if we're still doing the show in a few years' time, we won't be talking about collecting print as much.
I think in a few years' time, print may be just a collector's thing. I think it'll just be prestige.
That's all I'm getting it for. I do the majority of my reading digitally because the iPad's so convenient.
And convenience is the thing. It's so much lighter to carry on a train when you're going to work and stuff.
But DC aren't letting print go lightly. Ridiculously, we talked about Justice League of America being one of the big titles that's launching next year,
yep.
Effectively replacing Justice League International, mm-hmm. But it is going to be a flagship Justice League title with that big crew of people that we spoke about, including Green Arrow and Baz the Green Lantern. As you're probably aware. Now, David, 52 variant covers. 52, can I repeat that? 52 variant covers. You've got your Justice League of America
standard. Will they all cover. Be bound in one book, do you think?
Or is it 51 variant covers? No, it's 51 variant covers, not 52. I'm sorry, I went ridiculous.
So
ridiculous.
52 total covers.
Well, it's actually
51 variants.
No, actually, I think it's 50. It's going to be one standard cover and then 50 covers, one for each state in America.
Oh, for God's sake.
So you will have your Alabama cover, your Alaska cover, your Arizona cover, sorry, your Arkansas cover, your California cover. I think that's just gone a little bit.
Look, I think variant covers are a nice idea. They're good for collectors. You know, some of them, but the artwork is really lovely to see various artworks. But I think it's going, I mean, when you pick up, I mean, a comic book that has a lot of variant covers that I read is Vampirella. And every issue of Vampirella has like 7 or 8 variant covers. And you sit there and go, okay, that's because the Vampirella character is so iconic that all these artists do artwork for drawing Vampirella. And so we've got all these various covers so that we can have a look at all these different pictures of Vampirella. And that's fine. But I think it gets to a point where there's too many covers.
Yeah, I was actually, when I posted this story and I was talking a little bit about this story on Twitter and just expressing my disgust over it. There is actually an artist, Tristan Jones, who does a lot of variant cover work for various books. And recently he's been doing a lot of work for IDW on Ghostbusters variant covers.
Okay.
And the reason I got talking to him in the first place is because I did a regular column on my site called Cover Story, where I look at favorite comic book covers each month.
Good column, by the way.
Thank you. And I put that one up last month or the month before, and he retweeted it because he liked that we were in there. And he said, and so we got talking about this issue, and he said, look, he loves... he sees exactly what I'm saying. Why kind of? He said, for him, it's great. It keeps him in work.
Yeah.
And for cover artists, it's great. It's great. And I also like. It was actually. I think it was Bleeding Cool. Did two stories. It was like the case for and the case against variant covers. And look, you know, really, as a collector, as the thing we were talking about before, it's wonderful. You get to have all these different versions. Like, you know, you can actually pick which cover you like of that. You know. To get that month, and you know, you might have a favorite artist. Marvel at the moment, every other issue has got a Scotty Young variant cover, like, you know, with the baby,
with the babies, yeah.
Version. I mean, that's great, and I love Scotty Young's art. He's doing some amazing stuff. I love his Wizard of Oz stuff,
yeah.
But you know, I don't necessarily need that on every. I mean, although the Deadpool one was super cute.
Yeah. Well, they've all been very cute.
But,
I've got a question. Why aren't we doing something? Instead of making variant covers, if we need to include... I mean, yeah, okay, make a couple variant covers, but if we need to include lots of artwork because we've got all these artists doing great, amazing stuff, why don't we take a page, and we're not talking about high prestige here, but why don't we take a page out of Zenoscope, who do the Grimm Fairy Tales books, where at the end of every issue they have a gallery.
Yeah, look, and I think this thing. I mean, I think in the case of Marvel and DC, they're doing it for, and they're certainly not the only ones, because IDW have been doing this for ages. Dark Horse have been guilty of this as well. I think almost, as you said, Dynamite in a huge way. they've all been doing the various kind of thing. I mean, obviously, they want collectors to buy multiple issues of every, you know, comic. And I'm guilty of it too. I like for series that I have been collecting for, like, you know, every Green Arrow issue that's got a variant cover, I've got that as well. I'm guilty of it. But I think when it gets to the point where the variant
there is a point where they're taking advantage of you, though.
I mean, 52 variant covers. I mean, there will be people who will buy 52 covers.
Of course.
What does that work out to be? $3 an issue, roughly. So you're looking at least $180, you know.
Just for the same issue of comic book.
Exactly. Just so you can have different covers, one for each state. Variant covers aren't great for retailers either, because they often have to buy a certain number of books to get the incentive issues.
And there's always going to be the one cover that is more popular than the others, and they're going to end up with stuff stuck on the shelf. People are going, why would I want that cover?
Yeah.
You know, I remember this when the Star Trek reboot movie came out, and they released three variant covers for the DVD release. They had one with Kirk, one with Spock, and one with the bad guy. And I remember talking to a retailer who was basically saying, yeah, Kirk and Spock sold out, and they were stuck with all the Romulan ones.
Mm. I mean, look, in this particular case, DC are offering a complete pack to retailers, so they can buy them, and they can just buy, you know, have 52 issues on shelf. But it just means that, you know, if one person wants all covers, they're going to
have you gone and pick up your comic books today? Yeah, they're right here!
You just need a couple of slaves to help you drag them home. Look, you know, I mean, that was a story that jumped out at me this month. But I'll just go on quickly. I want to move quickly along through the news this week because I really want to talk about Why the Last Man.
Yes.
So let's have a little bit of this. That was movie news, in case you weren't...
I gathered that.
Sure. Not a lot, actually. It's been a little bit quiet the last couple of weeks because I think we're sort of moving up towards... a few big stories, but one of the ones that just caught my attention was apparently sort of part of the Dark Knight Rises Blu-ray DVD campaign. They're also starting to plug Man of Steel as well.
That's their next big one now. So.
And one of the things they're doing is on the Dark Knight Rises Facebook page and on their official sites, they've got a countdown thing. And as the time of recording, we've unlocked 66% of something.
Refresh your page. It's 67%
of 67, is it? we've unlocked a percent today, people. Keep up the good work. Something from Man of Steel.
You know what it's going to be, don't you?
It'll be
the new trailer.
Of course it will be, and I'm wondering if this one will look like a fishing commercial.
I hope not. Although they have announced as well...
This week on Shark Month.
What's interesting is that they've already said... I think it's now official that Man of Steel's trailer will debut... with The Hobbit.
Yes, I have heard that.
Yeah,
that's Warner. Yeah,
but this could be the internet debut.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that'll be the case, and the internet debut always happens first anyway. And I think that's great. I find this really interesting. The whole decoding, they did it with Iron Man 3 as well. Mm-hmm. One of the comments on one of the sites I read about this, and it made me laugh because I love the movie so much, which is Christmas Story. You remember that?
Yes.
And there's a series where he's trying to work out, he's got his secret decoder ring, and he finally gets the decoder thing, and it arrives in the mail, and he listens to the radio broadcast and gets it, and it basically tells him to drink more Ovaltine. and he's completely devastated that the secret message he's been waiting months to get is actually more advertising.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what we're doing. We're playing into the game.
We're playing into the advertising game, absolutely.
But, you know, as if we're not going to.
No, of course. You know? And the thing is, I mean, if it was something really exclusive, okay, that's great. If it's just a trailer, I kind of go, that kind of sucked me in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was something like, as an example, if it was something like an exclusive clip, or if it was something like that wasn't shown anywhere else, that could be something interesting. If you remember back when Dark Knight Rises, there was that big puzzle thing that opened up and we finally saw our first image of Bane.
Yes.
You know, that's kind of something new.
Someone said on one of the forums, it's just going to be a dark picture of General Zod's back. So that's what we'll get for this. Now, talking of teasers and all sorts of things, Marvel... While DC are working on their first movie, effectively, for their cinematic universe, Marvel are still talking about releasing that Phase 1 box set, which we know...
I thought this came away already.
Which was... No, it was pulled because of the lawsuit.
Oh, that's right.
And but what they've decided to do is, rather than just re-release it in a different case, it's still going to have the same glowing Tesseract cube in the center. I think basically they've changed the suitcase because it was the manufacturer of the actual original suitcase was suing them. And Disney's got history with this. It happened with the Luxo lamp.
The Pixar.
Yeah. So anyway, it's gone back on sale again. It'll be available on April the 2nd next year. And EW posts this story. Not only are they going to release the box set that they originally said, but they're actually going to include a few. They're going to take the opportunity to include a few new extra bits and pieces as well, including an alternate ending to Thor, which wasn't in there originally. It's basically got, and if you go to the link in our show notes, you'll see the video is on EW's website. It's basically, there's an extra scene at the end where you actually see, you know, that beam of light that shoots up at the end of Thor. It's, you see that Jane caused that. She's still trying to communicate
That.
So it is a nice little thing. Sorry, I just spoilt the ending of Thor for anyone who's not seen it.
Richard, I think you are just a shameful person. No, come on.
the very special Thor, David. For people who don't know,
on this very special episode of Thor.
David and I first met on the junket for Thor.
Thor is a very, very, very important film for us.
We met when we were interviewing the beautiful Jamie Alexander and the just as beautiful Tom Hiddleston.
They're both beautiful people.
I fell in love with them both that day.
Yeah,
actually.
Absolutely.
That voice of his. So did the people on my YouTube channel, apparently.
Yeah, so many people in the comments from my interview were all like, he's so dreamy. And if you take my YouTube channel as you know, authority, basically everybody is convinced that they're on together.
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre, but onto more concrete facts. They've actually said that for your $219, it is an expensive box.
$219
retail, but you can get a lot cheaper on retailers. They'll probably include something. Now, lest we forget, there's a bit of footage floating around out there. There's that Ant-Man test footage.
I want to see this still.
This might make it on there. They've been pretty mum, but I reckon we might see that out there. There could be some of the concept art from Guardians of the Galaxy that'll make it on there, because we've seen one still. I'm sure there's more. But they've also mentioned that include footage, concept art, and a few new surprises. Also, look out for a nod to Iron Man 3 and the Tony Stark shield file in the box set.
And I'll make you a bet by then they will have also included probably footage from Thor.
Yes.
Because they'll have finished shooting it by then.
Yeah, because this is April 2nd. We're probably going to have a trailer out by that stage, which will probably play with Iron Man 3 at the end of that month. So it's a no-brainer, because by that stage, we've got Thor coming out in November next year.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to this again. I pre-ordered the last one, so I'm going to have to go and order this one again.
My question still stands, though, which is, what happens when the battery runs down in the Tesseract?
It won't, because it's a self-perpetuating energy source.
That's what we hope.
Yeah.
And will it power the rest of my house?
I am going to create a wormhole as a result of it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Where are we going?
I don't know, but at least we'll have something to defeat Thanos.
A wormhole between our two places, so we don't have to drive to the studio every day. There you go.
That would be good. If we had a wormhole between our places, we could do the show daily.
Hey, there you go. All right.
Now, I think that's enough movie news.
I have this one. Can I play this one?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, here we go.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Is it, Richard? Is it really?
Yes, it is.
Actually, it is.
We picked this. We picked it for this week. It's actually the pick of the month, technically.
So
I should have dubbed over it at the end of it's the pick of the month.
Maybe we should change that for pick of the fortnight now? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe I will. We'll have to dub the end of that one.
We'll have to play around with that one. All right, people.
But still, you're listening to this during a week.
Yes.
So there you go.
There you go.
It is, of course, our kick-ass pick this week is Why the Last Man by the incomparable Brian K. Vaughan and artist Pierre Guerra. That's pretty much it.
Can I just say right off the bat, before we even get into this book, that Pierre draws women like no one else.
Yeah, there's some damn fine-looking women in this book.
They are just gorgeous.
Mm.
And can I tell you that even though she's a raving psychopath, and we will come back into that later, I find Hero incredibly attractive.
Yeah. which says a lot, because she's basically drawn as a female version of Yorick. So.
Yeah. It's kind of scary. But
now,
anyway.
This book, big deal for me, actually. Back when I started recollecting comics in the early 2000s, there was I started collecting capes again, because I'd been out of the thing, and I think that this was the point when superhero books were hot again because superhero movies were starting to come out again.
So this is post Superman's mullet.
This is post Superman's mullet, which was like which is the first time I started collecting comics.
I actually caught a couple of those issues the other day. I was looking through my old comics, and I got to Superman and his mullet, and I went, "Oh my god, this is why I didn't read DC."
Now, I stopped collecting comics in the mid-90s because of all that sort of crap that was going on. But by the time the early 2000s came out, I was interested in something beyond capes as well. Mm. And this is a point where Vertigo was starting to do some really, really hot stuff. Now, this was one of their flagship titles. And around the same time, Fables started as well. And Fables is still going.
Yeah.
120-something issues into it. I actually found, just by the by, I was back cleaning out some boxes at my mum's place the other night. I found issue 1 and 2 of Fables.
Oh, wow.
Bagged and boarded.
Keep them bagged and boarded.
I've got them there, so I'm very excited by that. Now, Why the Last Man was apparently loosely based on a 1964 episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Oh, really?
Where the world adopts a matriarchal society after disease kills every man on Earth.
I had no idea.
I didn't know until I read this Wikipedia entry. I was really just looking for the date that it started. But there you go. There's an extra fact there. This is a series that originally came out in 2002 and ran for 5 years. The premise is very simple, but the actual book is not.
No.
The premise is that a disease has wiped out every man on Earth, except for one. It's actually wiped out every male of the species on Earth, except for... Everything with a Y chromosome, except for Yorick and his pet monkey, Ampersand, who's also a male chimp. Well, not a chimp, sorry. He's a...
Cappuccino. No, what are they called? They're called... The helper monkeys. What are they? The not cappuccinos. That's not what I want.
Oh, we're going to have to look this thing up.
I'm looking up.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, cappuccino monkey.
Cappuccino.
Yeah, you go. It's the only other male ostensibly to have survived the plague. Now, what begins then is two things. First of all, Yorick wants to get to from the U.S., to Australia, as everybody does, because this is where his fiance, he thinks, because he was proposing to her just when all the
he didn't actually get there.
He didn't get the yes, you know.
Well, he didn't actually say,
"Will you marry me?"
Yeah, he didn't quite get it out. Before.
But he sees her as his fiance. Is trapped on the other side of the world, and he wants to get to her. Meanwhile, he's got the difficulty of being the last man alive in a world full of women. Sounds like an awesome prospect, but it doesn't play out as well for him in practice. So a couple of things are going on. One of the things, the reason I brought my hardcover of the first volume along here is because I wanted to pull up quickly a little thing from the end of the first book that Brian K. Vaughan writes, this little thing here about what wiping out all the men on Earth would actually practically mean. And this was statistics as of 2002, which would actually mean a gendercide instantaneously exterminated 48% of the global population, or approximately 2.9 billion men, 495 of the Fortune 500 CEOs, 99% of the world's landowners. In the US alone, 95% of all commercial pilots, truck drivers, and ship captains died. As did 92% of all violent felons. Internationally, 99% of all mechanics, electricians, and construction workers are now deceased. Mm-hmm. 51% of the planet's agricultural labor force is still alive. But they're saying that 14 nations have women soldiers who served in ground combat units. None of the UN, the US, nearly 200,000 female troops have ever participated in ground combat.
Yep.
Australia, Norway, and Sweden are the only countries that have women serving on board submarines, which becomes
a plot point in
the film. But of course, there's also Israel, where all women between 18 and 26 have compulsory military service. Again, another plot point. Interesting fact for us, David, because it's an issue that we rant about frequently. Worldwide, 85% of all government representatives are now dead, as are 100% of Catholic priests, Muslim imams, and Orthodox Jewish rabbis. Those were the stats as of 2002. So I think,
and I don't think they've really changed that much.
No, and I think it's a really interesting thing to point out, because what that kind of devastation would actually mean to the world and how long it actually took things to get back on track. He is effectively walking through a post-apocalyptic landscape for 5 years in this book, because things don't get back on track that quickly. The skills just weren't there. People had to learn to do things again. All the industry went down.
And there's a point made in the book where they're traveling by rail because the woman says, there are no pilots. You know, the planes are down because there's no pilots.
And then half the planes fell out of the sky.
Yeah.
And the other half, there was no one there to fly them. So look, you know, this is part of his thing. He has decided, he hooks up basically with two people. One of them is Agent 355. She works for a mysterious government agency known as the Culper Ring, who have their own mysterious motives, but her current assignment is to look after the last man on Earth. His mother, in fact, has actually risen to a fairly high-ranking position in the government because she's one of the last surviving women of high office.
Which is a plot point that was kind of also brought up in Battlestar Galactica, where she's the representative for education becomes the president because the male
chain of succession,
the chain of succession, all the other politicians are wiped out. Yeah. So he
also hooks up with Dr. Allison Mann, ironically titled, she's a geneticist. She's an expert in cloning. And she thinks she has something to do with the disaster, but she's determined now to look for a cure. So it's basically effectively the three of them, four if you count Ampersand. Which you have to. He is a major player in this book as well. I mean, best monkey in a comic book ever, I think we can agree. best ape in a comic book ever.
This book didn't need more ape.
No. This book had the right amount of ape. in fact, there's a second ape turns up later on.
Yes.
And that's basically the core of this book is them trying to get somewhere so they can work this thing out.
That's right.
That's effectively, but it's not that simple. There are different factions going around the place. There's the Amazons that have risen up, which are basically a group of militant women who have gone so far as to burn off one of their breasts in the tradition of the Amazons of legend, so they can carry bows and arrows better.
They can they fire a bow better.
They don't want to see the return of men.
Well, they believe that this is basically Mother Earth ridding the planet of men because it's now the time of women.
Mm.
And if they do ever find anything male, they destroy it.
Yeah.
And that's their entire modus operandi.
So naturally, Yorick's got to watch out for them.
Yeah.
They're like going around like burning down sperm banks and things like that as well. You've also got the Israeli faction, as we said. It's still got a functioning military who have come into it somehow. We find out a little bit later in the book why they're so intimately connected with Yorick and why they know about him and why they're hunting him down. There's also another government agency that's kind of like a group within a group from the Culper Ring. And there's a few other factions.
It's a more fundamentalist version of the Culper Ring, kind of bizarre in itself. We also have the Australian military.
And while we're on the subject of Australia, you still do get a bit of Beth, his fiancée.
Yes.
We get a bit of her story that's happening on the other side of the world.
And we also have, did you bring up the Arizona militia?
No, I didn't.
No, that's right. We've also got the militia that are out in the middle of the desert who basically are blocking the roads and supply routes because they believe they're in charge now.
Yes. So you've got all these different factions working against each other. It's a very complex book.
Yes.
And I was talking to David before this and saying that Walking Dead has kind of constructed that on a very micro level in some ways because you don't get out of the South much. And it's really a personal drama about this group of people, which... Why the Last Man is as well, but it does it on a global scale and why?
Yeah, because we end up in Australia at one point,
and in Europe,
and of course all across America.
Mm.
So they travel a lot. Which is funny considering that all they were really trying to do was get from the East Coast to the West Coast.
And part of that is Yorick following his heart, trying to get back to Beth. But also part of it is just necessity. People get kidnapped.
We forgot to mention the ninja that's following
them. There is a ninja. She comes up later. the thing is I want to say up front about this book before we get into some deep stuff, some deeper plot points and spoiler territory, is comics often get a really bad rap for not portraying women well.
Mm.
And they also don't get a great rap for having strong female characters. This is a book where the lead might be male, and maybe, that's a kind of a hang on. We needed to have a strong male to hang this onto. But effectively, every other character is a woman, and a very strong woman most of the time. And when they're not, their fragility is human fragility, not because of their gender.
Yes.
And I think that's a really important point to make because this is one of the best casts of characters in any book ever.
Mm.
And the fact that they're all female characters is a testament to Vaughan's writing in this as well. That and he carried this book through 60 issues.
And I love. I also love the fact that Vaughn introduced characters early on in the piece. They disappear, and then he brings them back 50 issues down the track.
Yeah,
I bring two particular examples of this. One example is the garbage lady who used to be a supermodel, who's now driving a rubbish truck, basically collecting bodies, who I think is a great character. Yeah, and when she's brought back later, she's even better. And the other characters are the traveling theater people.
Traveling theater people are great because they do, we effectively end up with a book within a book. Like we end up with, because the two things happen, the traveling theater people end up writing a comic.
Yeah.
And they said, well, should we give it the name, the main character, a Shakespearean name? Because, no, that's what cheap literature does to make it sound important. you know, it says a book with the characters Yorick and Hero. but it's
and I mean, those characters are great because we see them doing this traveling theater show, and then they write this show about the last man. Mm-hmm. Of course, they don't know about Yorick, but they write about this last man. But the, some of the things that happen in that influence Yorick on his thought pattern.
You know what made me think of when I was reading it? It's almost like Tales of the Black Freighter within Watchmen.
Yes.
You know, you've kind of got this story within a story that doesn't really connect, but it does influence the outcome of our main story and influences
it. And then we have them return way later at the end, and they're making a movie.
Yes.
But that's all falling apart on them.
Because they're trying to make an action movie.
Yeah, they're trying to, and they're saying, but you know, why are we doing this testosterone-laced action film? And that's not what we're about. And then, of course, as you said, they go on to decide that they could do this as comic book.
Yeah.
They're such good characters. Yeah. Right? They're really, really wonderful.
And that's what I really love about the series, too. It's not afraid to actually just have a whole issue where we just pause the forward momentum for a while and go off and explore these other characters.
Yeah.
You'll have a whole issue where you explore this theatre group, or you'll go back and you'll get the backstory of one of the main characters. Like some of the really interesting, like the really powerful emotional books are the backstories of Agent 355 or the backstory
of... one of the most tender issues, I think. It's actually only one or two issues, but it's when Hero comes back into the fold and she finds the other Beth.
Yes.
And then that friendship forms, and we have that issue of them traveling.
The together. Other Beth is, of course, a Beth that Yorick runs into on the road.
Who's living in a church.
He's living in a church, and he starts talking to her, and she's got everything in common with him, you know, and they click, they're intelligent, you know, they're both intelligent, and her name's Beth, and you know, it's kind of, he can't help himself. It's a, you know.
Yeah. And I think it's the one time he has an indiscretion.
He might have.
There's another one that's kind of a forced one. We'll talk about that in a minute, but on his own,
I think
free
he says
will.
By the end of the book, he said, I've done pretty well. I've been on the road for 5 years and I've, I've been with three women. I think he
captain.
Says, yeah. So who's even more like Yorick?
Than, yeah.
You know, she even has a monkey. but yes, it's and I think, yeah, no, and she's just, he's one of his major indiscretions, first major indiscretions, and her story ends up coming back later as well, which I think is really great. And all these things, even if they're just sort of one throwaway issue, as you say, all come back together by the end of the book. And I think that's a really great thing that I remember reading interviews at the time the book came out and him saying, I know how it's going to end. I know this. Mm. I know this from the start. I know how I want to end this. Because I'm going to have a lot of fun getting there. And I think it really shows that he had a very strong idea of where he wanted this book to go. I will say that there are times where I thought maybe this is one or two issues on this. They've labored this chase a little too long because we kind of
I can see that.
But then again, I was reading these all back to back again.
Monthly along story. That line, I actually felt that he actually did labor the Israeli soldiers a little bit. I thought that was. It wasn't heavy-handed. That's the wrong term. It was overdone. It was overextended.
Yeah.
It was something that once we had concluded that story, I felt that we there was just too much of it coming back. And I really liked the fact that she did come back at the end. We needed that.
Yes.
But there was just too many instances of it throughout the book, and I kind of felt like we were laboring that.
Because the book is, after all, Why the Last Man?
Yeah.
The title being a play on several puns there. Being not least it being Why the Chromosome, the character's name, Why Him, Why stands for Yorick, all those sorts of things, you know. They were all good questions, and it's a good driving point for the series. But unfortunately, some of those things do take you away from the story a little too long. But most of them just flesh out characters, and this is the beauty of comic books. You get to spend time with characters that you wouldn't normally get to spend in a TV series or in a certainly not in a movie.
Like
there's talk of this being made as a film.
They've been talking about it for a long time.
And there's notes in the Wikipedia entry of like all the different attempts. I would really like to see this done as a TV series.
I'd like to see it done as a cable television TV series. Yeah. Somebody like HBO or Showtime.
Yeah.
I think, because it needs the scale. Mm. It also needs to not be afraid of censorship, because some of the topic matter is, I mean, you couldn't do the Agent 7-Eleven scene.
Let's talk about Agent 7-Eleven. Yeah. So look, this is a book. Look, we're almost 10 years old talking about
spoilers
this
and all, everybody.
So we're talking about this. Basically, 355, who's his main companion, drops him off at Agent 7-Eleven, who's open all hours.
Which is a joke that is delivered in the comic book.
We don't know. Ostensibly, he's dropped off there just to be babysat.
Actually, let's backtrack just a little bit, though. York is going through a funk.
A major funk.
And let's face it, this is a man who is the last man on the planet. He's lost everything. He doesn't know why he exists. There's so many factors. He is in deep depression.
Yeah.
And he is purposely putting himself into danger constantly. Every time they say, you stay here, he jumps in. Every time they tell him to do something, he does the opposite.
Mm.
And we kind of think that 355 will have something to do with this.
Can I just point out one thing, that one very important fact about Yorick we've neglected to mention? He's an escape artist.
Oh, of course. Yes. This is very important. He's an amateur magician and escape artist.
Mm.
And he's a good one, as it turns out. But anyway, so 355 drops. They have to get the monkey medical attention.
Yes, that's right.
So she drops Yorick off with the one person she trusts, which is another ex-Culper Ring agent called Agent 7-Eleven. And from there, take it away.
Well, look, this is an interesting thing, because it ends up being something of an intervention for Yorick. As soon as she gets him in there, she ties him up and basically
drugs him.
Yeah. And effectively ends up in sort of an S&M scenario. She's. You think it's a one-sided thing at first. You think it's her trying to get her rocks off with the last man on Earth. But it turns out to be an intervention to get him to realize why he wants to be alive. And she pushes him to the point, virtually of death, to get him to realize that maybe, you know, he has a reason for living.
Yeah.
And
to answer the question, why does he put himself in danger?
Exactly.
You know.
And it goes through. It's very Freudian. It goes through his sexual history to find out why he has guilt over that. And it's a really powerful... I remember reading it the first time when it came out, and in single issues, and just being awestruck by the audacity of this book to do a couple of issues like that, and thinking, that's bold, man. I want to keep reading this book. And then I read it for another 10 issues after that before I remember taking a break from it. But at the time, it was just such a... Given, you know, that time in comics as well, it was just such a bold book. And, you know, it is even now, like 10 years later, I still haven't found something quite that hard-hitting.
I don't think I've ever read a book quite like Why the Last Man. I mean, that's... No. I mean, this is the thing. This is every time you think you've got a handle on it, he turns the direction. And so you'll go...
Yeah, Vaughn is the ultimate escape artist.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, and it's a book where with the ending... an exception, which we will talk about in a minute, never once do you really think, my God, you've completely misstepped here. Mm. And never once do you go, oh, well, I have no idea. Well, never once do you go, I know exactly where this is going.
Mm.
You, at every time you think you know where it's going, he'll go, let's take you this way.
Yeah.
And he'll take you in a completely different direction. So when you think, okay, we're going to go to Japan and we're going to get the monkey back that's been stolen by the ninja, right? He'll say, okay, let's put you on this boat. Oh, look what's on this boat.
Yeah.
And he'll kick you off on a completely different adventure.
And then you'll forget why you were going to Japan in the first place. Like and that becomes your entire life for that next couple of issues. And that's the mastery of this thing.
And then he keeps introducing you to these fascinating characters who you want more interaction with and then takes them away from you.
Almost every one of the characters he meets along the way could have their own book.
Yeah. A great example of this is the village of ex-prisoners.
Yeah. Now that's
and
wonderful.
The lovely, lovely girl who is attracted to him.
This is the first time I think that Yorick actually realizes that he could start a life, you know, in the new world.
Yeah, because he meets this girl who is just lovely, you know?
Yeah.
And it's this idyllic, beautiful couple of issues, and then of course the Amazons turn up, you know?
And his sister Hero has become one of the daughters of the Amazon, And she is the one, spoilers and all, people, stop driving now if you need to turn it off. spoilers and all, his sister kills her effectively, or does kill her, and he hates his sister from this point onwards. He really despises the Amazons, everything they stand for, and his sister. That's the start of his journey
of needing
the intervention.
Absolutely, because it was the moment in the book where Yorick's faith is shattered.
Yeah.
Because he actually says, when he sees his sister, he goes, "That's my sister, I'll go talk to her."
Yeah.
And it does not go well.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, and that's the moment where you sit there, from that moment onwards, is that basically when he tries to keep trying to die.
Yeah, because he's like, you know, he only had one. It seems like we don't know a lot about Yorick before the event.
Yeah.
But we get the impression he didn't have a lot of people in his life. He had Beth, but he was a weird magician guy that didn't have, you know, a lot of people. So for him to not have anyone and to find someone other than Beth, who realistically he's only clinging on to because he needs a goal. He needs something in this thing, even though we know throughout the book his relationship with other people is developing, and one of the major relationships he develops is with Agent 355, who never tells him his name until
we'll come to the end in a minute. We will come to the end in a minute, because the last issue is a bit of a bone of contention.
It is a bit, but
so we'll talk to that. We'll talk about that in a minute.
But they actually comment to each other at one point. You know, I don't think I've spent as much time with you as I have with any other person ever. You know, and it, you know, sort of took this event for us to form this unlikely friendship. And it's not just the kind of, you know, creatures of circumstance kind of thing. They actually form a genuine bond. And that's another great thing about Vaughan's writing, is that the relationships between these characters are so complex and so real.
Well, and the relationship between 355 and Yorick is fascinating as well, because she is in charge. She is the boss. But then there are these little moments where her guard lets down and they're sitting on, like, when they're on the train.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they just start talking. Mm. And you can understand why, and this is a spoiler, but you know, there you can understand why throughout the entire thing she is falling in love with him.
Mm.
She can't let him know because he's the charge. You know?
It's not just it's not that she's caring for him.
No, she is genuinely caring for him.
Because this is someone who's not had, like, a normal upbringing. She's not had she doesn't get any of Yorick's pop cultural references, and he's full of them. Like, he's the ultimate geek in this. He is the reader in a lot of ways too, because he's just rattling off all the stuff that most of the readers are going to get, all these references to films and comics.
And what I love is the fact that he's stuck with two people who neither of them get them.
Yeah.
Because Alison Mann is like a complete straight arrow.
Yeah.
And so she doesn't get anything either.
And 355 has never had television or movies or anything. She said, "I think I saw one once." And, you know. But so, you know, and so it's such an unlikely friendship, but they do form this incredible bond. I think that's a really powerful sort of motif that runs throughout it. But let's talk a little bit about the ending then, because we've been talking for well over an hour at this point.
Very quickly, before we talk about the ending, I just want to talk about Alison Mann for a second. Because once again, that is another relationship that is really beautifully written, because she is standoffish. Mm. She is insensitive. She is cold all the way through the book. But you know from reading it, this is the closest she's had to a family her entire life.
And she's fiercely loyal to her new family.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when you get to the finale, which we're going to talk about in a second, you can see that she is genuinely moved by the fact that she has to leave and go off and do her thing now. You know? And it's like, you can see that even though she's never really been overtly sensitive to these people at all, they mean so much to her. Mm. You know,
she's not... Which it's like one of those issues I was talking about, those one-off issues where we actually learn a bit about her childhood.
Yeah.
We realize why she's so hard, you know, because she wasn't shown the affection as a kid that teach you those basic human interactions. So, you know, there's a lot of touching moments in this, and for what is effectively a huge, epic, sometimes action-adventure, sometimes... it's a mystery. Sometimes it is just an intimate little drama piece, and sometimes it's a romance.
Yeah.
You know, it's all things, and all of them seem to work well. Like the best sci-fi out there, like Doctor Who, like all those things, it can be whatever it wants to be.
This is truly a soap opera.
Yeah.
In many ways. It's this beautiful ongoing story. But
let's just call it serial drama.
Serial drama is okay. That's fine. But it is literally a serialized drama series. And you could turn this into a television show easily.
Just like Walking Dead set out to do it. Walking Dead, Kirkman always said he didn't want to scare you. He didn't want it to be a horror book or a zombie of the week or a monster of the week book. He wanted it to be about these people dealing with very unlikely circumstances, which is exactly what Y is. Let's face it, the circumstances aren't that unlikely. I mean, you know, it is conceivable that a virus could wipe out.
Just probably not in 30 seconds.
Not in 30 seconds, yeah. No. But it is conceivable that, you know, we live in an age where we live under the threat of that kind of
and we're playing with genetics constantly.
We are playing with it. We don't know what we're doing.
No.
So I, for one, move to outlaw. No.
All right, let's move to this last issue.
Yeah, now the last issue is a little bit controversial, much the same way as the last episode of Enterprise was controversial.
Yeah, last issue actually was released as basically a clump, wasn't it? It was like issues 55 to 61 or something like that. There was this like end of all things book, and it was good. Don't get me wrong; it's a great ending. But my feelings on this were, and I was talking to Richard before the show, I just felt it'll happen too fast.
It is, because you sort of get to a point and you sort of found out along the way why Yorick has survived. And even he says at that point, well, that's a jip. and then you find out several reasons why the virus may have been caught. I think it's interesting that they never conclusively...
I actually read something from Vaughn himself the other day, who actually said that the answer to what happened to all the men is in the book.
Hmm.
But there are so many different people offering their explanations, he decided that he would never tell you which one was the right one.
Yeah.
And one of them is right, though. He said one of those mini stories that you hear throughout the 60 issues is the right answer.
Yeah.
But he's never telling which one.
Because everybody who believes that they did it is obviously driven by their own personal demons. Yeah. You can't quite trust it. So I think it's really fascinating that he doesn't overtly say that. But the final issue ties up, and it ties up the main story, which is Yorick getting to a point where he is back with the people he loves.
Yep.
That's not necessarily the person he necessarily set out to be with, but also getting to a point where he can start to be cloned. And they can start repopulating the Earth. And then we jump forward. We jump forward to, it's quite a time afterwards, about 30 years.
It's a long time because there were actually several clones around at this point, and they're adult.
Yeah.
So we're a fair way into it. And Yorick is what? How old is he supposed to be?
He's meant to be in his 20s throughout the book. So
at the end, he's what?
He's looking pretty old.
Yeah, he is. And,
well, he's also gone a bit mad. When they flash forward to the future, he's basically in a straitjacket in a room surrounded by monkeys who are all clones of Ampersand, apparently.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, they keep trying with it, just can't quite get him right, and which I think is a really lovely moment, actually, the bond that Yorick's formed with that. And it's really interesting, this ending, because it's a cheat in a way, because at the end of any epic saga like this, and I'll you know, and I mentioned Star Trek briefly before, and I think there are two kind of series where they had a very definite goal, which was Voyager, who had to get back home. And spoilers, people, they did. And that's
you just spoiled another one, Richard. Come on.
And that's kind of where that series ended, and that was a fitting conclusion. But then this kind of did what Enterprise did in a way, which was a lot of people complained that they spent more time with other characters in the final episode, which was Next Generation characters, than they did with the characters that we've just followed for 4 years.
Mm.
Now here, leaping forward into the future is almost doing that, because we've just spent 5 years with these people, and then suddenly it's like, forget them for a second. You know, we're jumping forward just to see what happens. And it's kind of like Harry Potter did it as well.
The problem I had with it was this. We come off of what is a powerhouse finale.
Mm.
We come off the fact that the Israeli woman has literally lost it. And the entire thing turns out that what she wants is she wants, and spoilers for this, guys, basically, her entire mission, 55 issues along, why she's been causing all of this chaos, forget all of the other subplots, she wanted to die at a man's hand.
Mm.
Because that would have been a legitimate death.
Mm.
You know? She wanted, because that was what she believed would be honorable.
Mm.
And it's like, are you kidding me? After all that, that's really what you wanted, right? So we've got all of this powerhouse happening to the point where Agent 355 finally whispers her name into York's ear at the moment of her death.
And it was a really sweet moment there because we talked about Agent 711 who forced him to see something that would keep him alive.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't want to know what it is that you're holding on to keep you alive. Remember it. Never forget that. And remember that's why you're alive. And he reveals to her, spoilers, people. He reveals to her at that moment, it's her. She's what he saw to keep him alive. And you realize at that point that Yorick had feelings for her just as much as she did.
They just, neither of them knew how to express it. Because he was holding on to this Beth thing.
Yeah. And she was holding on to the fact that he was her charge.
Yeah.
That she had to look after him. And she couldn't afford to be weak for a second.
That's right.
And which makes it a very tragic romance as well, and we didn't see that coming.
And this is where the ending for me felt rushed, because when we had that moment where she is shot, I felt like I didn't get enough time
To say goodbye,
to grieve. No. It was like she gets shot and almost instantaneously we're taken to the future.
Yeah, and I think that is probably a minor fault because it doesn't leave too sour a taste in your mouth. Because, I mean, effectively, we are working to... I mean, the major plot line is to work towards, Yorick repopulating the Earth one way or the other. Yeah. The old-fashioned way or the cloning
way. Well, I think the idea is make enough clones that they can then start doing it the old-fashioned way. So.
And so you have got that, but... You know, you're right, and there's a few storylines that just wrap up a little too quickly. We don't really know what happened to Yorick immediately after... that sort of thing.
No,
we don't need to know, but we it's still kind of...
We don't need to know, but I crave to know. And I think that's the problem. And I think that's why I felt that it was a little bit rushed, because I felt like it was almost like I needed to know just a little bit more.
I didn't need to know everything that happened in those intervening 30, 40 years or whatever it is, because that's another story, and that's irrelevant in a lot of ways. But as you say, there's just this really sharp jump between, you know, the deaths of several major characters and the end of that arc to the future, which, you know, and then they go back a little bit as well.
And maybe it's just a wanting, because this book is so good.
I didn't want it to end, really.
No, exactly. I mean, and I think that's probably what it is. Is it every issue you finish and you go, I must read the next.
Yeah.
I must read the next. Yeah. I must read the next. And so you end up spending hours reading this book because you just keep going, what happens next? What happens next?
Yeah.
And then for it to suddenly go, that's it.
Yeah.
You go, oh, it's almost like this. You know,
well, it's the Sopranos thing, isn't it? Where they ended the series mid-sentence.
And I hated that too.
So it's kind of like, because again, any series that's done well, you get to love those characters.
Mm.
And it's painful to spend any time away from them. And this series is exactly one of those series. You know, it's very rare to find a book where you actually care about the people you're reading about, and I could name a handful of books.
And as much as I like Vaughn's Saga, which is the one he's writing right now, it's nowhere near this.
But we're not there yet. But I think the difference with Saga is that we are jumping around between several different stories. Now, if we just spent the entire time with, you know, the mother and father and their child,
the problem is I don't like them that much.
No,
and that's the problem, is that they're not. York was instantly likable.
Yorick's ass. I mean, like, you know, I'm not as good looking as Yorick. I'm not as good an escape artist as Yorick. I certainly don't get as much action as Yorick gets, but he's...
You might if you were the last
man on Earth. I reckon even I'd have trouble with the last... if I was the last man on Earth. I think that's exactly it. I think it doesn't... I'm not going to say it leaves a sour taste in your mouth, because I still love this book.
No, all it really makes you want to do is go back and start all over again.
Which is exactly what I'm probably going to do at some stage. I mean, this is the second time I've read this series through.
Me too.
And even better the second time.
I can
time
actually
around.
Say it's the second time I've read this series through in the last 2 years.
There you go.
And yes, it grabbed me as much, if not better, or more this time around than it did the first time around. And I loved it the first time around.
Look, you know, I dare say, with our quibbles with the final... issue aside, which I think I think it's reasonable to be able to dismiss them, because it is more of a
personal
reaction at this point. this is damn near close to a perfect 60-issue run that you're going to find.
Yeah, I think so.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
It'll be a long time before I read something this good again.
There are a couple of series of books, and yeah, we talk about, you know, Comics 101, we talk about this is must-reads. There are a couple of series of books, though, that I hold really high.
Mm.
There's a couple of series where I sit there and go, this is, for me, perfection.
Mm.
Why the Last Man? Perfection.
And I think what separates Why the Last Man from some of those other ones, a lot of the ones we've spoken about, you know, be they Watchmen, be they, you know, Dark Knight Returns or what have you, they're all limited series. This is a 60-issue series that didn't slip up at its quality at all.
And that's what I was going to say. You know? I don't include things like Watchmen and stuff in this because, as you say, they are events.
Mm.
But I would put this up there with things like Alias.
Yes.
You know? You look at it and just go, that is how you put together a series.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You put it up there.
It has a beginning, a middle, an end.
And it's done, and it's a complete, huge story arc.
Mm.
And because what happens is, over time, things start to slip, which is why they're canceled.
Mm. Mm.
Whereas when something like this, you go, he knew the ending.
Yeah.
And he knew he got to a certain point and said, you know what? It's time to roll to that ending.
Yeah. It's like, so it's 5 years, sounds good.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's roll to that ending and we're ready to go. And he, I think at any point throughout the story arc, if he had started to lapse in quality, he could have said, okay, now it's time to roll towards that ending and could have brought it to conclusion.
Yeah.
So I think he was very, very consistent with his writing. Mm. And while he had a story to tell, he kept telling it, but he always knew where to go to.
Mm.
Mm. He knew where to rope it back to.
Exactly. You know?
And I think that's what made the series so good. I mean, it's one of the few comic books that I don't own in print. I've only read digital, and I want it in print.
The best way to get them in print is the way I've got them.
The hardbacks.
The hardbacks. There's five of them, 12 issues a piece, effectively. And, the first one has 10, and then there's a few more. Anyway, it works out to be... averages out to 12 issues a piece. They're really, really good, really high quality hardbacks, relatively cheap, which is amazing. Vertigo's been doing some great stuff with these reprints. They're doing Fables with about the same number of issues per book as well. They're all available in trade paperback as well, which is, you know, there's 10 of those.
Yep.
So you get roughly 6 issues per run. I'd really love to see them put it together as one of those massive, oversized hardcover.
It'd be too hard to read, though.
That's these were actually perfect size because basically I ended up reading a year's worth of comics in one book.
Yeah,
and you get all the real reason to get these, and I love it is just seeing the. And I'm flicking through it now and wanting to reread it. It's seeing all the cover art. Undisturbed. I mean, you know, there's just, I'm just holding some up to David now.
Oh, that's gorgeous. It's Hero,
gorgeous,
too.
Gorgeous, yeah.
Except it looks like she has two breasts in that picture. That's the only problem.
Yeah, someone stuffed up in continuity. But look, there's some beautiful artwork throughout this. I mean, one of the early ones. There's your favorite garbage collector.
There's my favorite garbage collector. I'll tell you, if she was collecting garbage on my street, I'd be never moving.
You'd be throwing out a lot of trash.
I would.
But, you know, look, it's a beautiful book to actually physically have, and it's definitely one I've got on my bookshelf at home with many other books as well. But it's a nice-looking set. Try and get those. Pick those up. Support print comics.
Support collector's edition print comics in particular.
It's also got all the alternate cover art in there as well. So,
and essays by Vaughan as well.
Yes.
Excellent. So we will definitely promote that and say I'm going to have to aim for those. Christmas is coming, people.
I've got them. So if you want to get me something,
you're still after the DC New 52 full.
Look, if anyone wants to send me anything, just a hot garbage collector. In that outfit. I don't know how she's collecting garbage in that outfit.
And staying that clean.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Yeah, anyway. Well, I think there's also a cover. You've probably got it in your book there somewhere. I think one of my favorite covers was, I'm just bringing up the issue now, issue 18.
Mm.
Which is just York laying there with just legs.
Yes, I haven't got that in this book, but yes, I know the cover. Yeah.
And the Madame Lash whip.
Yes.
That's a very, very good cover. There's some great covers, in fact. This is for art, this book was amazing.
Yeah, look, we've mentioned Vaughan a lot, but we mentioned at the top, Pia Guerra, amazing art.
Amazing.
Again, another one of those few rare examples where someone's done the art. from beginning to end, and just.
And you think she did covers as well? Is that right?
I'm not quite sure.
I wouldn't
say,
be surprised.
No, sorry. The covers were mainly done by J.G. Jones.
Oh, okay.
And Massimo Carnevale. J.G. Jones also did a lot of the covers for Fables as well, which were also known for their beautiful covers. Somebody else is doing those now. I think it's J.L. Rose. Just phenomenal book, artistic, written level. Buy this, people, Comics 101, all that jazz.
Absolutely.
Now, from Why the Last Man...
To
The Last Christmas, which is... We're actually going to come back in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
We're going to be having a look at... Because it'll be almost Christmas then, in 2 weeks' time. We'll be doing The Last Christmas.
Well, let's see. This will be released. This episode will come out the 1st of December. 2 weeks will take us into the middle of December. That's your Christmas issue.
See, my birthday is on the 12th.
And then there's 2 weeks. Your next episode would theoretically 2 weeks after that, but that falls into Christmas.
Yes.
So we'll take that Christmas week off, and it'll be the following, and it'll be 2 weeks, every 2 weeks after that.
Yes. So we're definitely going to go back to fortnightly in 2013, so look forward to that.
Yep.
But the next book you have to read is an IDW book called The Last Christmas by Jerry Duggan and Brian Posen. And artist Rick Remender and Hilary Barter. Looking forward to reading that because it's kind of a post-apocalyptic Santa story.
Santa and zombies, people.
Yeah. So those of you who remember last year, we did Batman Noel as a Christmas book. So I think we're going to be struggling to find Christmas books. Hopefully they print a few more Christmas books.
I'm sure they will. Even if we digged back to the 70s and the 80s, we might even find some Christmas stuff.
Be sure
to
hit us up on Facebook and comics@geekactually.com. If you've got any other Christmas suggestions, and we can put them in our stocking and think about them and maybe even just have a quick chat about them.
Absolutely.
Next time as well.
Sounds good. Now, just a little bit of housekeeping before we finish up today. We mentioned it last issue. We'll mention it again now, which is, of course, we've been invited by Apple to come and do a workshop or two. That'll be at Bondi Apple Store and possibly the Sydney Apple Store. We haven't dates confirmed yet, but they will be in February. We're just putting out advance notice so people know that that's what's going to happen. So keep your calendars clear in February because you'll be able to come along and meet us doing our thing. No, basically,
because if you think these voices sound hot on in your ears. Then imagine attaching two
imagine
bearded
the disappointment
face.
You're going to have when you actually
just,
see
just
us in
think
person.
Beards with t-shirts.
Beards with t-shirts. No, they've kindly invited us along because we record on Apple equipment. The workshop is about how and why we podcast and the sort of equipment we use.
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's a good question. Sort of equipment we use. What is our workflow? Stuff like that. So it's going to be a bit of fun. And then of course afterwards we can actually have a little bit of a meet up with the people who listen to our show, which would be kind of fun. So it's very nice of Apple to do that. So we just want to make sure that we keep that on everybody's radar that February this is going
to
be happening.
We'd love to see as many of you there as possible.
Absolutely. Now, Richard.
Yes.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, not a lot of places at the moment. I've actually, therealbits.com, that's therelbits.com. You can find me technically. I actually have the site up on Bricks at the moment because I'm taking a little break.
We both are, so it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still updating it with stuff like this, and I'm going to be doing my end of year lists and a few things like that as well. But that's where you can find me, and certainly all throughout 2013 I'll be back. Maybe not as big as I was last year, but I'll maybe enjoying a little more. But you can also find me again, technically on Twitter at DVD Bits. Haven't tweeted a lot lately. You can find me on Facebook, but you have to be my friend. you can find me wandering the streets looking lost as well.
And yes, my son Nicholas, who is our regular audience, is basically waving his iPad at me. He just put up a new video that last night. So,
and that's all we've got time for.
So that's all we've got time for. We're moving on. No, he's put up a new Lego animated film, which is, of course, Avengers Assembled. So it is comic book related. So he wants us to mention it. YouTube.com/Nicky McVeigh. Go check that out. It's a lot of fun. And if I can get motivated, I might even embed it on the site. We'll see. But and you can find me at geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. But like with Richard, because we're in this hiatus period, we're kind of not posting a lot at the moment because we're doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes. We're trying to get new shows off the ground, everything. So because January is our big launch and it's catching up to us fast, so so we are being a little bit quiet on that side of things. We did just put up a new film actually special that you can find, which is The End of Twilight, so you can find that up there as well. And there's some specials coming up now. I was pondering talking to Richard, and I'll do it on there. I'll put him on the spot. Why not?
Okay.
Shall we do a Skyfall show?
Yes.
And let's talk a little bit about Bond
Take the bloody shot.
So I thought what we might do is do a review, like we did with the Twilight thing. We'll do a special. We'll review Skyfall, and then we'll talk about Bond in general, just about, you know, the direction of Bond and so forth.
Of course.
We'll try and get that up in the next week or so. And of course, we will be doing a Hobbit show when The Hobbit comes out. Mm. The Hobbit show will be an interesting one, because The Hobbit show is actually going to be officially episode 100 of Film Actually.
Yeah.
It will also mark the last episode of Film Actually. So it's going to be an interesting, because it'll be a new film show. Now, we are taking suggestions at the moment, and you got to be quick, because we got to start making moves, final moves on this. But we are looking for a new title for the film show. Mm-hmm. Film Actually will end at episode 100.
We'd like something with film or movies in the title.
We've been toying with things, like somebody's thrown out. I think it was name's gone out of my head. But we've been throwing out things like Geeks in a Dark Theater, Fourth Row Middle. You know, all these, and they're great titles. And then we got it's about finding that one title that sticks. And we go, that's the one we can announce every single week, because. Once it starts, we're going with this. So we got to find that right title. We think we've locked down the Geek Show's title, so that's good. And we are putting out a shout out to everybody out there. If you are musically inclined, we are looking for bumpers, themes, all sorts of stuff for the new shows. So, and you'll get credited on the new shows, especially if you've got websites. That's good to know. But that's enough of our advertising right now.
Yes.
I think that's it. I think we're done.
I hope so.
Yeah. It is very hot here in Sydney, and so we need to get out of the studio because it is hot.
I've already taken my pants off.
I was about to say I'm right behind you, but that would have come out all wrong. And that's not what I meant. Dudes, before I put my foot in it one more time.
Ow.
I'm Dave McVeigh.
I'm a very awkward Richard Gray at the moment.
And we'll see you all in 2 weeks. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
I saw her today at the reception. A glass of wine in her hand. I knew she was gonna meet her connection. At her feet was a footloose man. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, well, you might find.